From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
In reality, I know for me as a parent, I've been planning college since my kids were born. So, and not that that's a kind of a different thing just because of my educational background of being on a college campus, but a lot of the decisions every parent makes, you know, where to live and what to put my kids in and what to do during the summer. We make those decisions all the time. And so we are preparing, even though we may not be thinking about it, we are preparing them for college or at least life after high school. But when it specifically, when I specifically say, let's think about what college looks like so at least we can put that in our mind, I really start in middle school.
Dr. Rudy Jackson, founder and president of College Prep Professionals, LLC. There's no set formula for getting into college. No combination of high school courses will ensure your admittance into your dream school. But Jackson's company helps students and their family find the best college fit, get admitted to these schools, and prepare them to succeed there. Jackson, along with his wife Karen, started his company 10 years ago to help family and friends. Jackson previously was an assistant dean at Vanderbilt University and worked in the Department of Education at Davidson College. Currently, he serves as director of co-curricular assessment at Georgia's Gwinnett College. Jackson worked with students remotely as well as in person. He provides consultation, courses, and one-on-one coaching. He recommends that families start preparing for college in middle school. I'm Johnny O'Hanson, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, College Prep Professional, LLC, with President and CEO, Dr. Rudy Jackson, In Black America.
Ever since I started teaching in 1994, family and friends, you know, had been reaching out when their kids became college age, you know, hey, what should we be doing? And it was just a part of what we did, just like I would do with the person in our family who is a real estate person or who's in the banking industry. And so, you know, we were just sharing that. And so, you know, we're also building up these experiences, sitting on scholarship committees and learning kind of what really matters most. And so it really started off as something for family and friends and people in our community. But then we really got to a point, you know, I had taught for 12 years, and I was looking for somewhat of a career change, and at that time the economy was really good, and lots of folks in the, you know, working class and middle class were really trying to do a little extra to invest in their kids, and it was just a great opportunity to kind of turn what I had been doing for fun and for free and for family into a real business, and so that's what happened in 2006.
Based in Atlanta, Georgia, and founded by Dr. Rudy Jackson, who has extensive experience in higher education as an administrator and instructor, College Prep Professional offers families guidance in the arena that few are equipped to navigate on their own. Their staff have over 35 years of experience helping students, parents, schools, and churches with a wide range of educational needs. Their creative and quality commitment have led them to win awards for service. Most importantly, they have helped clients find the college of best fit, gain admission to these colleges, and prepare for success once on campus. Jackson has served as a college professor and administrator, director of academic learning, coordinator of pre-college programs, and a member of the College Scholarship and Admissions Committees for the past 18 years at institutions such as Vanderbilt University, Davidson College, and Randolph-Macon College. Jackson is passionate about helping parents and students improve their chances of being admitted to the top 100 colleges and universities. Recently, In Black America spoke with Dr. Rudy Jackson, Jr.
I was born in Arlington, Virginia. I spent all of my childhood there and then went off to college in 1984. Went right on through undergrad, master's, and Ph.D., most of that work in Virginia at a small college called Randolph-Macon, and then got a master's at James Madison, and then went up to Pennsylvania to Lehigh University and got my Ph.D. in school psychology.
I wanted to ask you about that. What is school psychology?
School psychology is really the science behind teaching and learning. And so most people interact with the school psychologists at a school, probably K-12, for kids who are either having learning difficulty or exceptional learning performance, where they're being tested to be gifted, or they're trying to find out if they have a learning disability, or if a student is having significant emotional or behavioral problems. And so school psychologists are trained to evaluate learning environments, to give IQ and achievement tests, sometimes personality tests, and then kind of run those meetings so that people get the right information so the student can be in the best situation to be successful.
So what sparked that initial interest in that discipline?
Well, that's a good question. And in life, you know, lots of turns happen that aren't planned. And so I went to undergrad thinking that I was going to be or planning to be an engineer, only because I heard engineers make a lot of money and I was pretty good at math and science. And so had not done a lot of career exploration, did not know any engineers, but I did think it was a pretty cool profession. And went to undergrad and I was at a liberal arts school and knew that I would, you know, be majoring in physics and kind of was had a little program where I'd do an extra year and have an engineering degree at a large institution. And got into first year physics class and found out that there were other students who liked physics a lot more than I did. And so I bounced around a little bit. I actually changed my major 3 times before landing into psychology. And I think it was second semester of my sophomore year, my college roommate suggested that I try psychology. Tried it, loved it, and kind of been there ever since. And then I had teachers who kind of said, hey, you know, not only the psychology, but I really think you'd be good in this aspect of psychology. And let me connect you with one of my colleagues. And these folks over here have a little bit of money, and they're going to help you. And so I was really, you know, connected and networked through kind of my professors to really help me on that path.
Which institution came first, Vanderbilt or Davidson College?
Davidson did. So I started teaching on the faculty back in my alma mater, which is Randolph-Macon, which is just north of Richmond, Virginia. Taught there for 6 years from 94 to 2000. Then I had an opportunity to go down to Davidson and teach for another 6 years. And so I was in Charlotte from 2000 to 2000, really 2008. But I stopped teaching at Davidson in 2006. And that's when I started my business for a couple of years. And then in 2008, I went to Vanderbilt. My family moved to Vanderbilt, had a great opportunity there to be an assistant dean in student affairs and do assessment and basically take my training as a school psychologist and apply it to the college learning environment, which was a great 3 years. So actually almost 4 years there. So that's how I got to Vanderbilt.
What was some of the major lessons learned when you were at Davidson teaching that next generation of secondary school teachers?
Well, one of the big things and one of the things that really drew me to leave a psychology department at Randolph-Macon and go to Davidson was that Davidson's education department was small, but it had a really good focus, and their focus was the facilitation of learning. It wasn't, we know the information, we're going to give it to you, we're going to pour it into you, you just learn it. But it really was, what can we do as far as our instruction, what can we do as far as the learning environment to help you learn it? And so that really appealed to me. And so I took that into every class I taught, and in some ways, some of the students were really or had been prepared to learn the old way. Just tell us what's on the test. Just give us the content. We're really, really, really bright kids. We can do it. We can knock it out, and we'll give it back to you just like you want it. And so there was some time when some of the things that I learned in theory and trying to put that into practice in the classroom really had to be practiced and honed, and sometimes we made mistakes and, you know, try to figure out, you know, how do I really help these students learn some of these tough things. And so some of the conversations kids are having now around race relations or around police brutality or around politics, or those are things that we would grapple with on a daily in some of our classes, and it made for a much more active environment. And, you know, research shows us that's how people learn best. And so that's really what we did tried to do at Davidson.
Are you doing any work with any of the school systems in the Atlanta area?
I am. I'm in Gwinnett County Public Schools, which is North Atlanta. It's one of the largest, they would be described as an urban public school system in the country. And I work really, really closely with them in a number of ways. One of probably the way in which I impact parents and students the most is I speak to about 2,000 or 3,000 students and parents every year just around college preparation, being successful, you know, preparing for especially the top colleges. And so that's really my service back to our county schools. But then I also serve on certain councils. I, you know, work with the chamber. And so, and our university here that I currently work with is Georgia Gwinnett College. We have a partnership. And so here in Gwinnett, there's a really strong alliance between the business community, the public schools, and the institution of higher ed. And so I've had the opportunity of, you know, even being like a principal for a day. They got a great program where you get to kind of job shadow a principal at a high school or middle or elementary school. And so it's just a way to, you know, support my community, but if I've got some expertise, I can bring it back. And one of the other things I love to do is one of the middle schools has what they call a shark tank for 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. And, you know, just volunteering for that and being able to, you know, watch these young people talk about these aspirational businesses and getting feedback and kind of, you know, just keep that fire alive in them. And so a lot of volunteering, and then I also offer some of the services through my college prep business.
I know that's right. If you're just joining us, I'm Johnny O. Hanson, Jr., and you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio. And we're speaking with Dr. Rudy Jackson, Jr., President and CEO of College Prep Professionals, LLC. Dr. Jackson, what led you and your wife, Karen, to open this business?
Well, you know, we both are in higher ed, and ever since I started teaching in 1994, family and friends, you know, had been reaching out when their kids became college age, you know, hey, what should we be doing? And it was just a part of what we did, just like I would do with the person in our family who is a real estate person or in the banking. And so, you know, we were just sharing that. And so, you know, we're also building up these experiences, sitting on scholarship committees and learning kind of what really matters most. And so it really started off as something for family, friends, and people in our community. But then we really got to a point, you know, I had taught for 12 years. I was looking for somewhat of a career change. And at that time, the economy was really good. And lots of folks in the, you know, working class and middle class were really trying to do a little extra to invest in their kids. And it was just a great opportunity to kind of turn what I had been doing for fun and for free and for family into a real business. And so that's what happened in 2006. But unfortunately, the economy really took the downturn in 08. So most of my clients who were kind of working class, middle class folks didn't have that disposable income to kind of support, you know, the services I was providing. And then that's when we transitioned to Vanderbilt. But we just found that there was a big need because lots of the kids who wanted to go to these really strong schools, they didn't really know what the process was. And so they really only knew half of the process. They knew how to take the right classes and get ready for the SAT, but they didn't know the kind of nuances that really made one student look better than another student with the same scores and really what they needed to do. They hadn't sat on those committees. And so that's where we knew there was a gap and really a problem because a lot of these kids would do everything their parents had told them or their teachers had told them, and then they wouldn't get accepted. And they would kind of look around and be like, you know, what happened? And so we really felt like if we can give them the best information, we can support them through the process, then at least they can be informed to put in the best application. And then there's no guarantee, but at least they know they didn't just forget to do something that they could have done. And so we just felt there was a need, and we kind of stepped out on faith and been doing it ever since 2006.
When we first made contact, we had a brief conversation, and part of that conversation had to deal with the lack of extended guidance that one student may receive in high school considering the workload that these counselors have. Let's talk about that a little bit as far as if a student isn't, I guess, to the point being pushy about their future, they kind of get lost in the shuffle with everything else that has to go on in the counselor's office.
Sure, because they're really two dynamics, especially in large school districts. You know, and the first is just a numbers game.
Right.
You know, if one counselor has 300, 400, or maybe even 500 students on their caseload, they just have less time to devote to any individual kid.
Right.
And the other piece is that there have been so many other responsibilities given to our counselors, especially around testing, that they don't have as much time to devote to the college prep that they would like to do.
Mm-hmm.
So they know what to do. They'd love to do more, but when it comes to a large caseload, they are really trying to find creative ways to make sure everybody gets the basics. Because at that level, they want to make sure everybody's graduating. That's
exactly.
First and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
They want to make sure you got the right classes to graduate. And then if there are state-required tests that have to be passed, they want to make sure that you're passing those tests and passing those classes so that the graduation rate is as high as possible. So that's job one. And then for job two, you've got, you know, different groups of students that are on track for college. You got students that are kind of on the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got the students that are going to be fine. And so then it's a matter of, okay, you know, which group or subgroup are we going to put our time and attention to? And so every counseling office has to decide, you know, where do we put our time? Where do we put our resources? And what's really been good, there was a thought that there would be some resistance on animosity to me coming in and trying
mm-hmm.
to provide what support and information I would have. But in virtually every case, especially here in Gwinnett, they've kind of opened the door and saying, you know, hey, we'd love to have you. And not just because we can't do it or we don't have to do it, but in many cases, I'm coming in saying most of the same things they are saying,
mm-hmm.
and the students and parents are hearing it from a different voice, and it's resonating. And so I'm supporting them, and I'm helping them have even better conversations with the students once they get to them, so they don't have to waste 15 minutes to say, well, did you already search the colleges? Did you look at their essays? Did you look at their requirements? They can hit their ground running if my message has resonated with them. And a perfect example would be how you use the summer. So those counselors have already told those students, let's say rising seniors, they told
mm-hmm.
them when they were finishing junior year, here are all the things you should do. And 95% of them don't do much of that. And they come back and they start school, and now they got classes and tests, and they got to do all that stuff. Well, if I can motivate some of them to do some of that work and say the same thing, then at least there's a larger percentage of students coming back more ready, and then that takes a little more pressure off those counselors, and then they can put their time and effort to the students that didn't do it. So we found a really, really happy partnership with me supplementing everything that the counselors are doing here in Gwinnett County.
Dr. Jackson, we also talk about starting the process early. How
yeah.
early is early? And the second thing is that we see colleges and universities basically through athletic programs or some type of academic competition. Some students may want to go to a particular institution, but grades or preparation may not have them at that particular level yet. How do you navigate through that process?
Sure. Well, I'll take the first question around how early to start. And, you know, a lot of times we forget. It's a lot of back-to-school stuff here in Georgia. We've been back in school kind of 2 weeks now, and, you know, you're having parents' night and back-to-school night.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I go on Monday, I'll be speaking to a group of ninth-grade parents. And for many of them, the idea that we're talking about early college planning makes sense
mm-hmm.
in ninth grade. But in reality, I know for me as a parent, I've been planning college since my kids were born.
Okay.
And not that that's a kind of a different thing just because of my educational background of being on a college campus,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of the decisions every parent makes, you know, where to live and what to put my kids in and what to do during the summer.
Right.
We make those decisions all the time. And so we are preparing, even though we may not be thinking about it, we are preparing them for college or at least life after high school.
Mm-hmm.
But when I specifically say, let's think about what college looks like so at least we can put that in our mind, I really start in middle school.
Okay.
And a lot of people wait to high school, but middle school is critical for a couple reasons. The transition to middle school is really, really important, especially because of the changing format for most elementary schools. It's not a whole lot of changing classes, and middle school becomes a lot more rigorous. There's a lot less support usually. And so managing the transition is important. And then middle school is a great time to also begin much more career exploration, at least for me. I really found it because the kids are so, personally, mentally, they're developing, they're able to kind of comprehend and do more with the information that's provided with them. They're able to connect the dots better. Mm-hmm. And so I really push a lot of career exploration, career engagement. Now, again, you could wait until ninth grade to do that. But again, if I was the kid who thought they wanted to be an engineer and I could do a few things in sixth and seventh grade and figure out I love it or I hate it, then that allows me to move on to maybe the next thing a lot earlier. And so many of the things that can be done early are not just because you're going to do everything to get your application ready. Mm-hmm. It's really building that student and, one, building really, really good academic skills around studying and time management, organizations, because those are the things that are going to help the kid be successful as the work gets harder. But I'm a really big proponent of getting into these careers really early because, again, the quicker you can discount something, mm-hmm. the easier it is for you to get into the thing you love. And then when you find what you love and people around you find out that you love it, they then begin to connect you with their network.
Right.
And so if your son or daughter, if I find out your son or daughter is interested in entrepreneurship, then if you and I are friends, I'm going to try to hook them up in every opportunity I have mm-hmm. with all my network. Mm-hmm. You know, but if the kid never explores it, it's something that's not even on my radar. And so that's kind of what's my message always to middle school parents is those are the reasons why we want to start early. And, again, whether your kid's a high performer, whether they're a C student, or whether they're having some academic difficulties, these things are still important for kids at all levels.
Yeah.
And the Go second ahead. Part, okay, so let's make sure I got this right, that we're talking about a student who may have aspirations for a certain college, mm-hmm. regardless of academic or athletic, but may not be prepared or may not be a strong candidate for that school. And
right.
then, you know, how do you support that student? And so for me, there are a couple of things. And in some ways, I do kind of slice it differently for athletes. The athletic piece, you know, sometimes I would never try to tell a kid that, hey, you're not going to be able to play basketball at Duke because you're not even playing varsity in the 12th grade. So
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you and I probably know that ain't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But if that kid wants to spend his or her time to
so
give it
that.
His best shot or her
right.
best shot, then, hey, I'm all for it. But what I would do is say, hey, that the amount of time that you're spending towards the pursuit of that goal, if it's unrealistic, then you ought to think about what else you could do with that time and energy
mm-hmm.
to pursue another goal, okay? And so that's one of the things. And we're here in Georgia, the SEC and, you know, University of Georgia is really big and ACC with Georgia Tech. And so you get a lot of kids who want to be athletes and want to play at Auburn or Alabama or Georgia
mm-hmm.
or whatever. And just 2 weeks ago, I spoke to an entire senior class. I had a bunch of football players in there. And, you know, there are probably a couple that may be able to play D1 or big-time D1. But, you know, the overwhelming majority are probably not going to be able to fulfill that dream. And I just say pursue your dream, but also pursue the other ways in which you can get to your ultimate goal. So if your ultimate goal is to go to college and to get prepared to go out into a career, then, hey, you can still go to Auburn. You can still go to Alabama or Georgia. But let's look at your academic preparation. Let's look at all these other things that you can do. And so my personal philosophy is I'm not the one, especially if it's not my kid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the one that's going to tell a kid not to pursue their goal. But I also try to be really realistic with them about the time they're investing in a certain goal and how they can also reallocate that time. Now, when it comes a little differently to the academic piece, if we see that a student doesn't have the academic profile of, let's say, the entering class or the freshman class at a school, what we try to do, so for example, there's a student that wants to go to Georgia Tech. They have very high academic qualifications.
Mm-hmm.
If they are significantly lower than that, we just provide a couple options. Say, hey, if Georgia Tech is your dream school, let's first understand why is it your dream school. Is it your dream school because a family member went there? Is it your dream school because you just fell in love with the football team or the engineering program. Let's figure out what it is that's your, what it is about that school that makes it your dream school. And then let's figure out, can you get that somewhere else? And so if you want to go there because you feel like they have one of the best engineering schools and you don't feel like you're going to be able to get in there, mm-hmm. let's look at some other engineering schools that you can't get into. Or let's look at some other schools you can get into as a freshman, and then let's see if you can just be academically outstanding in your first year and then transfer to Georgia Tech. Because many times a direct route may be blocked, but there may be a way to get in through transfer or some other ways. And I actually had a client that actually did just that, had a parent who was a Georgia Tech alum.
Mm-hmm.
They did not get into Georgia Tech as a high school graduate. They went to another school in the what we call the USG system, the U.S. system of Georgia, and, I mean, had a great semester. The folks at Georgia Tech in the engineering program told that young man, you know, these are the things we're looking for to make you competitive to transfer in. He knocked it out, and he's at Georgia Tech as a sophomore. So, you know, sometimes that goal can still be achieved, but then sometimes it's not. And I just tell them, hey, there's no guarantee. We got to look at, if you want to be an engineer, let's look at other opportunities to be an engineer, for example.
By and large, are most universities and colleges' admission processes similar?
No, actually, in many ways, they can be very, very different.
Okay.
First of all, based on admission. And so some schools are what we call like a research one institution, very mm-hmm. high focused on, you know, research. We have some that are more teaching institutions. And we have some that have very strong public missions that, you know, for that state, they really want to support the students of that state. And they, you know, really give the students in the state a higher priority. And so the institution's really different. Some are access institutions. My current institution is an access, open access institution.
Okay.
And so because of that, the process differs quite a bit. I think for many students, at least historically, they've looked at, let's say, maybe the flagship public at, let's say, UT Austin or University of Virginia or University of North Carolina Chapel Hill or University of Georgia, and they think about, okay, well, to go to this school, I'm going to have a certain SAT score. I'm going to have to be in the range with a certain GPA and take a certain number of APs or IBs.
Dr. Rudy Jackson, Jr., founder and president of College Prep Professionals, LLC. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to your future in Black America programs, email us at jhanson@kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. Remember to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at kut.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O. Hanson, Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.